Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, this is pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
She's a Malaysian with a dream unlike any other. This 28-year-old plans to put Malaysia on the world paragliding map by the year 2020, as her love for being airborne and all things adrenaline-inducing drives her to the World Air Games. This week on Bar None, we are proud to introduce upcoming Malaysian paragliding sensation, Nadia Wafa.
Bar None, BFM 89.9.
Imagine being airborne, sitting in your very own armchair in the sky, looking down on an absorbing view of the greens of Kuala Kubu Baru or the relaxing shores of Besut Terengganu as you've never seen it before. Now that's the view 28-year-old Sharifah Nadia Wafa gets to enjoy every other day, but still continues to crave in a quest to be among the top 25 paragliding athletes in the world within the next 3 years. Nadia Wafa has been paragliding for almost 2 years now, and in that time, she has been training relentlessly to be Malaysia's first athlete at the World Air Games. She's also currently part of the Paragliding Bureau at the Malaysian Sports Aviation Federation. Last year, she has helped organise the Paragliding World Cup that was held in Kuala Kubu Baru. I spoke to Nadia about her love for gliding high and how she plans to put Malaysia on the world paragliding map by the year 2020.
My name is Sharifah Nadia Wafa. Currently now I'm a freelancer doing creative architecture graphic design, but I'm going for full-time paragliding to pursue a professional paragliding career.
How did you even get involved in paragliding in the first place?
But I started with skydiving actually. And then when I did my static ramp, and then I was doing my free fall training, but it was getting too expensive and too time consuming in Malaysia. So one of my instructors was a paraglider also. So he said, if you miss being in the air, why don't you try paragliding? I said, okay. Then I went and tried. I did a tandem in Kuala Kubu Baru. I said, okay, I want to learn solo. Then I started learning solo and I've been flying ever since.
Okay, so what exactly is paragliding?
What makes people always confused between paragliding and skydiving is that skydiving is you jump off an airplane and your chute is basically small. It's meant to just slow your descent. But paraglider, we run off a cliff. Any kind of cliff.
Wow.
Yeah, so because basically we set up our glider, we call it the glider, we don't call it parachute. So we set it up, we wait for the headwind to come in, then we just inflate and we run off the cliff. So our glider are designed to go up. So say that we took off from a height of 1,400 feet like KKB, which is Kuala Kubu Baru. We can go up to 3,000, 4,000 feet up on the air and just stay there for hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just the thought of jumping off the cliff, was it frightening the first time?
I guess because I did skydiving first, but there was some anxiety during my first solo because you don't know whether that thing is gonna like carry you or not. But you just gotta have faith and trust, I guess.
So the reason why you decided to join paragliding is because it's the next best thing to skydiving.
Yes. Correct.
And any other thrill-seeking activities out there?
Well, I guess superbike. That's it, one. And then I've always done a lot of ATV and any kind of extreme sport, I guess, I will try my hands on.
Okay. Now, would you recommend it? Would you recommend paragliding for just anyone?
Yes, definitely. Especially we are looking for more female athletes in Malaysia. So, like, when I went to Indonesia, their community is very big. The female paraglider is a lot. And they are athletes. They are competing professionally.
Tell us more about that then, like competing as a paraglider professionally, because I don't think it's not a widespread profession, right?
Yeah, in Malaysia, not yet. But in Indonesia, yes. So basically, in paragliding, we have three disciplines that we are competing of. One is accuracy. Second is cross-country, XC. And the third one is acrobatics. So I'm aiming for accuracy. Basically, accuracy is just you fly, and then you have to land in the target, which is the size of the pad, the electronic pad, the 0.0 point is just 20 cents size. Yeah.
Okay.
So you take off, you top to bottom, then you just straight ahead to the target area and you have to land. It's actually quite harder because when you aim for something, it's actually harder to control the glider.
So how do you train for that?
Well, anything that is like sports is you have to practice. Practice will make it perfect. So I had a coach. I engaged a coach from Indonesia. He's a former world champion. Then that's why I've been going to Indonesia. I'm training. So it's just fly every day, every fly as much as you can. And the more you fly, the more you get feel the glider, get used to it.
Okay. So then how frequent do you jump off the cliff per day?
Well, I try as much as I can. Now that I'm working freelance, so if I can fly on a weekday, I'll just go. But like in Indonesia last week, I was two weeks in Indonesia, so every day I fly.
Every day
we try to maximize how much we can get, depending on the condition, because this is a sport that relies on wind condition, on the weather itself, on mm-hmm. the environment.
Okay. Now, are there specific skills you need to be a professional paraglider?
Well, there is. Basically, what very important is the airmanship. That means you have to fly safe, be safe, and always use the proper gear. It's all this kind of thing does matter, and always know when to fly and not to fly, because some people, we call it, my instructor call it an intermediate syndrome. You know, when people I just want to fly, I don't care, I'm still new, but I just want to follow people. So it tends to open you up to danger, which I've seen a lot of a couple of my friends that were so eager to fly end up in the hospital. Yeah.
How does that affect though when they say they want to fly, but is it because they fly without experience?
One is you fly without experience, and second is I think because you want to do something, you just ignore the fact that the wind condition is not stable, your glider is not proper. So it does affect, because this is an extreme sport, so the danger is also extreme.
Okay.
Because if you collapse at like 100 feet, it's high. Yeah.
Now, for the average Joe, how long or how many times did you have to give it a go before you got comfortable with the equipment, the height, and maybe the possible disasters?
Well, the possible disaster is the first part of any extreme sport for me. For me, I think because you have to understand the risks of the extreme sport before you decided to join it. Because what happened with a lot of people that they get trauma is because they are not ready by the fact that when you do this kind of stuff, you will break your leg, you will fall.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of obvious, isn't it?
Yeah, because some people don't really think about it because they're, it's just fun. It's just fun flying, there's no danger, but realizing that fact, that danger is the first step. You go and approach a proper instructor, a mm-hmm. licensed instructor. So ground handling is important, especially for paragliding. And then before you start solo, the instructor will give you a tandem ride. So a tandem with the instructor, two people. That is the moment where he will see that whether you are scared of heights, whether you have problems. And if you don't have problem, then they will let you feel the glider to maneuver. So during that tandem moment is where the instructor will see whether you are scared and what's to tackle.
Okay.
And then if everything is okay, then you will have it for solo.
Have you ever met someone who's afraid of height and then did paragliding anyway?
Yes, I pulled my best friend. She was scared of heights. I said, but you have to try it. You just don't know, maybe it's in your head or is it. So I basically forced her to follow me. Then I asked one of
my... Was she traumatized?
Well, at first she was scared and she was shouting really loud during the first takeoff. Then after a while, she said she enjoyed it and then she said she will do it again. Ah. So it was just in her head.
Now, you say you want to be serious to be a professional paraglider.
Yeah.
So if I'm not mistaken, it's to be top 25 paraglider in the world.
Yes.
And, you know, how do they judge or assess your skill for you to be a top 25?
Okay, so basically we in order to compete internationally, we are registered under FAI, which is Federal Aeronautic Institute, which is a French federation. So a lot of countries registered under FAI. So when we go to competition, we go to competition, it's category 2 or category 1 that have a ranking, where if you win or if you lose, you will have your ranking there, and then they will be submitted to the international FAI. So then they will create your ranking. So I have to join a lot of competition, a lot of, at least Cat 2. Cat 1 is professional, Cat 1 is higher. So Cat 2 is for intermediate. So I have to join either Cat 2 and Cat 1 to get my ranking up within 4 years, okay. Within 3 years actually.
Within 3? Why the specific timeline?
Because the next World Air Games is 4 years from now. Yeah. Because World Air Games is like the Olympics of air games. So all the air games, skydiving, parachuting, and then we have like a gyrocopter. Everything that is flying is there. Okay. It's competing there.
Where is this?
Last World Air Game that I went was in Dubai last year, December. So the next one either will be France or USA. So they are still bidding for it.
Okay. And will it be expensive though? Because like any other sport, for example, tennis, to get up the ranking, you have to join competition, which means it's cost, right? Yeah. So is it the same for paragliding?
Definitely. Paragliding is actually quite expensive because our gliding set is not cheap. Like my own set right now cost me almost 8K in total. But luckily, there is a community. There is a paragliding community where you can share, you can buy secondhand. And luckily, I have my instructor. He's very supportive, and hopefully, I can get the proper gear to compete and the support from there. Mm-hmm. And also, I'm looking for sponsorship if there is. Yeah.
What kind of sponsorship?
Well, money is the best. But if not, it will be equipment that will be very awesome. Because equipment is very expensive. And then I think most is money because I need it for travel, whatever that I need to go and do.
You were saying that paragliding is not really widespread in Malaysia. So is paragliding easily accessible here though?
For competition athlete is not widespread yet. We do have athlete before, but not the proper one. But in terms of doing tandem and fun fly, yes, that is actually quite easy to access. We have a very good site in Jugra that is doing tandem every weekend, and KKB also. And you can just log into, I think, paragliders.my to get the info.
Mm-hmm. And what's been your favourite place so far to paraglide?
Well, here in KL, around this side of the country, is Kuala Kubu Baru. And there is this new site they opened in Besut, Terengganu. It's by the sea. So it's just flying by the sea, by the beach. And then in Sabah. Ranau is quite nice. Ranau, and then there is Koko. Koko is quite high, but it's quite scary for me because in order for you to reach the landing area, you have to cross this huge pylon, you know, this electric pylon? Oof. Yeah, so you have to be high enough, and then you have to just shoot for it. My first time is I shoot for it, and it was like, my barometer, which is what tells me the height, is like, it's like, I'm going down, I'm losing height, and then the thing is in front of me, I was like, come on, I just gotta go.
And how did you...
I crossed it.
What happens if you just land on it?
That's why you have to assess the decision. If you don't have enough height, you have to turn and find a safe place to land.
Okay.
Yeah, but there are some cases already people landed short, so it does happen sometimes. And for me, after I crossed the pylon, I landed short of the almost like half a kilometer from the landing area because I didn't gain enough altitude and height. I didn't have enough lift. So what I did was this. There was this village. So I landed in front of somebody's house and there was kids there playing outside. It's like, oh, then somebody fell from the sky.
And I heard there was one time last year you got stuck in a tree or something.
Well, that is during my very, very early year in paragliding. It was actually my 12th flight of my entire paragliding career at that time. So for that day, that was my last flight of the day. I think it was 6th flight of the day. So it was evening time already, almost 6 like that. So I said, at that time, I had this intermediate syndrome where I am tired, but I still want to fly. So I just straight to my instructor at that time, I want to fly. I know my condition is not right. Because to think back of it on it, because when I wanted to take off to inflate the glider, I had trouble inflating. So that was actually the first sign. So my instructor helped me. He pulled me and then I managed to take off. So once I took off, I was playing on the right side. And I think my brain was just tired. When I was turning, I wanted to turn to the landing zone. I turned and then suddenly I was just sinking. I was getting sucked in. We call it a venturi area. And then there was a tree in front of me. So I went into the tree. Basically, I went in the tree because my glider is higher. It's still high from the tree.
Right.
So I went in. I saw, it's a tree. There's no way I can avoid it anymore. So I just pull out my feet, cover my face, and went in. So, yeah, I went in, and then the first thing I saw is that I just went look up, hopefully that I'm not falling. I just see where my glider is. And I said, okay, I'm not falling, I'm stuck here. I'm stuck here, I look down. Oh God, this is very high. It's almost three story highs. And it was at the edge of the cliff. Oof. So I was looking up, and there's no other branch. There was this small branch that is just beside me, which I grabbed and just want to distribute my weight. And then I think there was other people flying and it was on the radio. So it's like, Nadia masuk pokok. So after that, I can't come down on my own. there's no way for me to come down on my own. So we called the fire rescue. It took them 4 hours for me to get me down. It was 6:30 p.m. in the evening when I got stuck. I came down at 10:20 at night.
Oh God!
And I came out from the hill. I think around 11. I reached home around 2 a.m.
And was that your worst experience so far?
Well, yeah, that was my worst. Yeah, but I did have some funny experience where I almost landed on a roof because of the wind.
Tell us about your experience helping to organize the Paragliding World Cup in Kuala Kupu Baru last year.
Ah, okay, that was actually quite interesting because at that time I was still new. So, but because I had a background in event design and event management, so I offered to help. They asked me to help. So, I did as much as I could. And last, I think we approached Red Bull. We get sponsor from Headwear, and doing the event was amazing because there was a lot. That is the point where I met all these other athletes. We had 14 other countries that were participating, and almost 100 pilots, international pilots. There was 30 from Indonesia. There was from Austria. There was from a lot of 14 countries. Wow. Yeah. So that was the time when I met, and then I felt very inspired. I was like, wow, this is amazing accuracy. Because a lot of pilot imagine they love cross country. But for me, I just love accuracy. I love that competition feeling of like, in that split moment, that is when you decide whether you win or lose.
And do you think Malaysians are starting to get really excited about paragliding?
I think so, yeah. But because, again, the community is still small. And then I think one thing that really stops people is because they think it's expensive. Of course, it is expensive. But there is another option where you can get secondhand. The community is there to support you, to help you to get involved in this.
So what's the starting cost to pick up paragliding?
The cheapest can be almost 2K, and then but for starting, if you pay, I think almost 1,005 for the cost. The cost will include the rental of the gear, the school glider. So basically, to start your first solo, you don't really need to buy anything. You just need to pay for the instructor fee and start training. So all the gears will be provided by the school.
And where else in the world is where paragliding is catching on as well?
Actually, all around the world. Malaysia are catching up, actually. Indonesia, Thailand, they all have very good place to land, to fly, and then they're very good pilots. We are catching up, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, and tell us about where can people find more information about you?
About me, you can go to my Instagram, which is just search Nadia Wafa, NadiaWafa. And my Facebook and also my YouTube channel, all with the same name.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we hope to see you in the next 4 years in air games, either in the US or France.
Yeah.
Good luck for that.
Yes, thank you very much.
I've been speaking with paragliding athlete and 2020 World Air Games hopeful Sharifah Nadia Wafa. For more interviews like this, check out our podcast at bfm.my/barnan. I'm Angeline Tay, wishing you a sporty weekend ahead. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Joe Cordell of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. Here are a few quick divorce tips that we provide our clients. Number one, don't move out of your house just because your wife tells you to. Remember, that's your house too. And number two, don't blow through the financial statements that you file with the court. These are key exhibits, and they often make or break your case. And number three, watch the social networking. Expect your wife's lawyer to do a thorough online search. And incidentally, this is a two-way street. Now, a bonus tip. Partner with your attorney in assembling evidence. You're one of the two leading experts on your life and marriage. Your attorney needs your input to achieve your goals. And finally, talk to your attorney before taking action. Good luck.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's San Francisco area attorneys, a partner men can count on, online at cordellcordell.com. Offices in San Francisco, San Mateo, and San Jose. Se habla español. Legal services available in English and Spanish. Kimberly Llewellyn, licensed in California.